Just something I've just noticed as we've gone on, because we were telling our own personal stories, that people that aren't maybe represented here today on this panel are, of course, the women who can't, for all kinds of reasons. They can't travel. And so they are left up to their own devices. And I wrote in an article recently, if you think that doing horrible, unspeakable things to themselves and their own bodies, or risking trying to get the abortion pill and risking 14 years in prison, if you think that's gone the way of the witch burning, it hasn't. It's happening on this island today. And I think we should just mention them before we go on with the questions, that is a huge part of it. We know roughly 12 people will travel today for a termination in another country, but we don't know how many others are either being forced to continue a pregnancy with which they cannot cope, or they will attempt to end it themselves, or they will risk 14 years in prison. So that's why we're here. So we'd like to throw it over to the floor now. So any questions, please put your hands up and the mics will come to you. Lady over there.
Thank you to all of the panel. I'm sure that was very difficult. My name is Rita Hughes. I work for the Royal Church of Midwives here in Northern Ireland.
try this one.
Women like you, Helen, and like you, Jennifer, in my career in Northern Ireland. In the days 15 or 20 years ago, where our medical staff at times, moved by compassion, felt able to almost turn a blind eye, find a reason to allow a woman to have a pregnancy terminated here in Northern Ireland. They can't do it now. They won't do it. They can't risk it. This is their professional career on the line if they try to subvert the law. Because one of the things that has happened here with all of the hoo-ha 14 years of trying to get guidance out for healthcare professionals and no guidance, and the constant threat of imprisonment has meant that our obstetric colleagues live in a culture and a climate of fear, and they are unable to stretch or bend or subvert the law in any ways. And what that means is that abortion for women in Northern Ireland, particularly abortion for fatal abnormality, which is a very costly procedure, has become a socio-economic issue for women. And the reality for women in Ireland, North and South, has always been and continues to be that women who can afford it travel and have a pregnancy terminated, and women who can't afford it are happy.
Get a response to that from Gráinne. What are the specifics in Northern Ireland? Do you think are the specific challenges being faced here?
Well, I think Breda, you know, has alluded to one of the more significant ones, which is that women here, where abortion is lawful, and bear in mind there are extreme restrictions on that, there is no pathway into the NHS here. So in the absence of that, we have the one Mary Stopes Clinic, and obviously the Family Planning Association as well, who do great work in enabling women's access to this form of healthcare. And we have in the audience Emma Campbell and Kelly O'Dowd, who are amongst the escorts at Mary Stopes, who run the gauntlet of supporting women getting access to this building, who, if they weren't doing what they were doing, these women wouldn't be able to get the information and the services that they so vitally need. So we need guidance from our Department of Health. We need our health minister to stop pretending that this is something that's going to go away, to continue to bury his head in the sand, or to continue to delay for whatever the latest reason is. The bottom line is, we need guidance. The other is, of course, the fact that our laws date back to 1861, and it's 2015. So what we need are laws which are fit for purpose, which at a minimum, and I stress the at a minimum, mean that women who have fatal diagnoses or have been raped or are victims of incest can access these services. But obviously that is minimum human rights standard compliant. And we'd also need, of course, then guidance to ensure that women can access services within the, within that framework. But we have a bit of a way to go, but we do have core challenges which are underway. We have amendments that we're trying to get into existing legislation making its way through the Assembly. So we are being very creative and proactive about how we get this change. And one way or another, we'll get it because we're determined and women deserve nothing less.
Thank you.
And just to add to that, in the context of the legislation that was introduced in the South in 2013, it's a little bit of be careful what you wish for on one level. Because the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act, which, if you remember when it was being discussed, was actually the Protection of Maternal Life During Pregnancy Bill when it was first proposed, and it became the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act. So it again goes back to that notion of just how much the Eighth Amendment and drives law and policy in this area in the South. When it was introduced, it allows for an abortion in cases where there's what's in the legislation or what's described in the legislation as a real substantial risk to the life of the woman. There is still no real guidance for healthcare professionals about what might constitute a real and substantial risk to the life of a woman. So we still have a situation where, as Dr. Ron O'Mahony, the master of Hollis Street Hospital, the National Maternity Hospital in Dublin, said recently, actually at our event in June, at the launch of our campaign in June, that doctors are forced every day to play medical roulette with women's lives. And that's through legislation that wasn't introduced in 1861, but was introduced in our Parliament in 2013. And it's why Amnesty International is very clear, not just in Ireland and in Northern Ireland, but at the global level, abortion should always be decriminalised. Yeah. It is never appropriate to have specific criminal legislation related to a particular healthcare service. You don't have an illegal, criminal hysterectomies bill. Why do we have a criminal law that deals specifically with abortion? Failures on the part of healthcare professionals, or illegal acts on the part of healthcare professionals, as they might occasionally occur in relation to abortion or anything else, should be addressed through professional standards, and should be. And actually, that's the one area where, frankly, I think healthcare professionals are most likely to be concerned, and rightly so, or through the general code of criminal law. The notion that we need a specific criminal offence to deal with abortion just underpins the misogyny that drives law generally in this area. So it's why Amnesty at the global level calls for decriminalisation in all contexts, both north and south. This should not be a matter of criminal law. It should be a matter of medical ethics, professional standards, and then guidance written in international law. That's not to say that there can't be laws that regulate or restrict access to abortion in particular circumstances. For instance, reasonable restrictions like, for instance, gestation limits is something that states can indeed do. But abortion should never be an issue for criminal law specifically.
And can I just say that, again, that little tick in my brain that keeps happening, but to hear the words, we need to be at minimum compliant with basic human rights. This is a Western European country, and it's 2015, and we are not compliant with that minimum standard. I'm sorry, that just popped out at me there. It just feels weird that we have to be here. It feels very strange, very surreal, comic almost.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you. I'm Carmen Shaven from the Right Green. I think everybody can call me Mary Ann.
Sure.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the panel for sharing your stories. And yes, it is shocking. It's shocking in the Republic of Ireland. Even more shocking here in Northern Ireland when you think it's the same National Health Service as we have in the rest of the UK, but different rules for mothers that are living here in Northern Ireland. But one of the questions I want to ask the panel, do you think a lot of this is maybe, not a lot of it, but a part of the reluctance of governments to bring in the legislation is cost? Because if you look as well at women who are pregnant, the casualisation, the whole thing. Whenever I had my children 25 years ago, you were in hospital with a cesarean section for 10 days, you were in with your first baby for 5. now a year and a night the same day. Is that part of the equation there too, that there's a cost and there's a resource issue? It's just something that's, you know, become more apparent to me.
I mean, if I talk about that in the context of the South, we've never seen anything to suggest that that is a particular concern, frankly. But then, as you're probably well aware, in the context of access to healthcare in the South, cost is a complex issue because we don't have a national health service in the way that you have here, in a way that exists in the UK generally. So cost, I don't believe that's a factor. I think that what underpins our laws of the South are old views that Graham has well articulated in his film, that underpin our attitudes towards women's reproductivity. I mean, the current Minister for Justice, Frances Fitzgerald, in response to the mother and baby home scandal about a year ago, described this as an issue that spoke to how Ireland addressed women's reproductive rights. And I think it's incredibly important, and I'm delighted and really grateful to Graham for making the film to draw that line very clearly in the way that it has. There is a very clear link and line. I mean, it's just an unbroken line from how we dealt with issues of women's rights over the past 200 years on this island and in how we're dealing with them now. I think that's the underpinning issues. All of those issues, I mean, there are huge socioeconomic factors around access, and it's certainly something in the context of the South that's going to have to be dealt with when we get to the point where we have, at the very least, human rights compliant abortion law. It's then making sure that access to abortion is safe, free and legal for women, at least in compliance with the minimum standards. And it's awful to say, to use that language, Graham, again, but that's what we have to push for. Socioeconomic factors will absolutely feature here, as they do for women here in Northern Ireland right now as well.
Cost is not the issue that we're up against here. I mean, I think it goes back to a point, you know, that Colm has well made, which is really the underlying attitudes that have dictated our laws and dictated the fact that they haven't been removed. And it really gets to the heart of our understanding of the role of women in society and this whole notion of the stigma and deviance that surrounds this issue, that somehow if a woman accesses abortion services that she's deviating away from her natural role of a mother. Our politicians seem to fail to grasp a very basic principle and point, which is that motherhood is a choice. And it's not something that should be forced upon a woman, nor should a woman be forced to continue with a pregnancy. So really the biggest issue here is tackling those attitudes and the harmful stereotypes that have prevailed for all too long on this issue. It's a gender equality issue, and in 2015, you know, 100 years after, you know, suffragettes, that suffrage movement, this is where we still are. We don't have full gender equality, you know, but we are on our way. And it's voices and activists who really bring about this change, which is why we need people who speak out, and is why we need our politicians to finally catch up with where the public are on this.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I was actually just about to invite you in. I would love to please hear from Mara Clark from the Abortion Support Network.
Yeah. No pressure.
No pressure at all. I don't need a mic. I'm American.
You're not.
You're right. I'm British now. They'll have me. There's so much that's been said. There's so many people in the room who probably are sick to death of hearing me talk.
Never.
there are a few things. First of all, with what Rita said about women who have money have options and women without money have babies, the louder we say that, because they're not just having babies. They are drinking bleach. They are drinking floor cleaner. Mm-hmm. They are taking all the pills in their medicine cabinet. We had a mother of four contact us and say, totally matter-of-factly, I'm trying to figure out how to crash the car to have a miscarriage but not permanently injure myself or die. That 7% of people who are against abortion in all circumstances, they want to throw the bathwater out with the baby. And we are the bathwater. And that's what needs to be addressed here. And I know there's a lot of pushes to allow for terminations in cases of rape and incest and fatal fetal anomaly. And yes, yes, any abortion that can happen without a woman getting on a fucking plane is a good thing. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's this idea of, we're going to force you to be a mother. So you people who have the good abortions, maybe we'll let you have your good abortions, but the rest of you dirty whores have to be mothers. I am a mother. It's not a punishment, it's an honor.
Mm.
And it's not a job that you give to somebody who doesn't want it. And that's it. You know, somebody put something up on Facebook a couple years ago, it showed up on my feed, and I just threw it out there, which was, I only am in favor of abortion in certain circumstances, such as when somebody is pregnant and doesn't want to be.
can I just say I think someone asked me today what they can do to help, and I pointed them to the petition, which is a very which is something I've been doing for years, very simple way, very easy way. It doesn't really take much out of me to sign something and so on. But one thing I didn't really have time for in 140 characters is to say that we are one of those stories you mentioned. We're one of those good abortions, you know.
I didn't mean to.
I totally understand your point, but ours is a story that brings up one aspect of the issue. It hopefully makes people think a little bit more carefully about what they're saying when they say they oppose abortion. And the thing is, I think more stories should. I think if people really want to help, they should talk about their abortion if they're in a position to. If they're in a position to, without hurting themselves, harming themselves, getting into trouble with whoever, their family or whoever it is, they should tell their stories. You know, put it on Facebook, you know, write a blog about it. Do whatever you can to get these human stories out there and to show people the faces behind some of the things you're talking about. You know, so that is something that I really would like, because I don't think this is going to be a top-down revolution. Yeah. This is going to come
Absolutely.
From the people. The politicians in Southern Ireland are cowards. The ones up here seem to be fanatics. and you have to move around them. You have to move around them, you know. So I think that we need to hand this over to people, you know, because we can't wait for politicians.
Sorry, just in terms of what Mara has just said and what Graham has added, just going to give a shameless plug, because Mara didn't, just to Abortion Support Network, because many of you will be aware of their work, but for those of you who aren't and who have very well followed Twitter accounts and so on, the Abortion Support Network are entirely reliant on public donations, and they help women from Ireland, north and south, to travel across to England. And bear in mind, these are the poor women. These are the women who don't have the financial means to access these services. So any and all support that can be given, we would very much welcome that.
I think that something that's coming out of what Mara said and what you guys have reiterated, but it's not having access, safe, legal access to abortion on this island isn't preventing abortion. It's just making them harder to get and less safe. So that's what you're for if you're anti having abortion accessible here. I think that's what really jumped out at me when Mara spoke at the March for Choice, was the things that women will do to themselves when they want to end a pregnancy, and they really feel they need to end a pregnancy, and they can't for financial or visa reasons or whatever. And that image really stuck with me, and it's one I think it would be useful for you all to take away with you. It's not preventing abortion. It's not. Our laws are not preventing abortion. They're making them less safe. Anyone else? Yes, up the front here. And we've got you on my side, so don't worry. Won't forget you.
Hello, my name is McGinty. I'm a member of the Labour Party in Northern Ireland. And, I mean, we are supporting the extension of the 1967 Abortion Act to Northern Ireland. And we've been lobbying and talking to our colleagues over in England. And when our women's officer, Catherine Johnson, who unfortunately can't be here today, and she really wanted to be here, actually spoke at the conference and got on the platform and mentioned the situation here, there was quite a lot of shock amongst ordinary members who didn't know. So, I mean, we are here and we're supporting you guys. And, I mean, if there's anything we can do, we will. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gentleman
in the back there.
Graham mentioned that politicians down south are cowards, and politicians here, some of them anyway, are fanatical. I can tell Graham that some of them are fanatical cowards. I, I found the film itself very useful, but wonder can it be adjusted for here? I wonder how we get our message across to people within the Assembly. We have members there, of course, here today, and people who do support us there. But how can we encourage more? At the end of the day, shame is sometimes one tool that drives people towards finally acknowledging a whole range of human rights and drives states sometimes. But I wonder what our strategy should be to approach people within political parties, including some of those who are fanatical in themselves, because they're there and they're likely to be there again after the next election. How do we drive that forward? I don't know the answer, but it's a question we need to find what to do.
Don't you find it very strange that ostensibly Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom, and that I don't think people in the mainland, which I call Ireland, but I don't think people in the UK know that this is the situation. Because I hate to say it, but it's always been true, but as soon as the bombs stop going off, everyone just forgets about it. And they don't realise that the civil rights struggle has been replaced with another struggle. You know, it's now women who are being subjected to these things. And so I think the thing to do is to remind people in the UK that you're supposed to be on our side. You're supposed to be looking. I don't think it's an issue at the moment amongst mainstream feminism. It doesn't seem to be on people's radar over in the UK. I think, as I've said before, and I've got into trouble for it, people seem more interested in whether the next Doctor Who will be a woman. You know, that's fine, but this is an emergency, you know, and people in the UK need to be reminded that this is an emergency.
I think you're absolutely right, but I do think that at the minute, anyway, we have a devolved administration here. We're hopefully going to continue to have a devolved administration here, and we have to address the people within that administration and make it clear to them, make it clear that their constituents are ahead of them. It's a point that Patrick makes quite often, Ronnie makes too. They're behind the people in this, and we need to find a way to get them with us.
Thank you.
Okay, we have time for a few more questions. So this lady at the front.
Hi, my name is Ellen. I work for the Irish Edition of the Times, and I wanted to thank you very much for sharing the story. But my question was kind of referencing something that Colm mentioned already. Some people are seeing the upcoming election in the South as an opportunity because abortion has already come up as an election issue. And Labour has specifically said that they would like to see abortion available in your circumstances, but it's heavily caveated, and our Equalities Minister has already said that that's a conversation the public isn't ready for at least another 5 years. And I was just really interested to get a response from you on that.
I have a feeling Colm O'Gorman has something to say about this. just a hunch.
I said earlier on that for politicians who say that Ireland isn't ready to answer this question yet, they really need to listen to what Ireland is saying. And I'll draw a parallel, I suppose, back again with the, I don't want to always be doing this because I don't think it's always useful, but in this regard it is, draw a parallel with the marriage equality referendum. They said exactly the same thing about their issue. They said, you know, and even during the campaign, we had politicians and commentators and indeed people from the media saying that, you know, this, you know, there's a big soft no, people aren't really saying what they think. People have been saying what they thought on that issue for years, and Ireland was ready for that question, and Ireland is ready for this question. And frankly, any politician who believes that when they, if they're lucky enough to enter government after the next election, they can't, based on what is simply right, put this question before the people, should not enter government.
Can I just say how disgusting it is that anyone would say wait 5 years when people like Jennifer have experiences like they have. Just wait 5 years. How many more stories will happen in those 5 years? You know? It's disgusting. I mean, one of my favourite things on YouTube is I don't know if you may be able to remind me who it involved, but four politicians who were on a discussion show. Do you know what I'm talking about? I think so. Yeah. And they got this question that was very long, very involved, very forcefully argued. At the end of it, they all basically looked at their hands. Something was suddenly interesting about them, and they said, "No, we're not going to be addressing that." And that was it. And they were let off the hook. They weren't let off the hook quite. Another woman came along and said how disgusting it was that they didn't answer the question. But I think, and this is, and the great thing about this is this will be fun to do. Don't let them off the hook. Don't let them move on. Get answers out of them, because they depend on the politeness of Irish media, which is the most non-confrontational and, you know, charming media in the world. But the Irish people, the brilliant thing about Irish media culture is that there's a great tradition of phone-ins and all this type of thing. Irish people really have a voice. Use it, you know. It'll be fun. It really will, you know. Because I just long to see those guys twist a little bit longer on that. You
know? So it will be fun. You have to be Irish here first. This gentleman here, just a couple more questions. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Jerry Edwards from the TFMR.
Hi, Jerry. Hi.
So thank Jennifer for speaking with Jerry on this panel. So, a lot of difficulties to speak publicly about your experiences. I'm one of the people who travelled up to the North 14 years ago as well, and was able to provide the services here. And like many people, we have to leave our babies behind. We received cremation remains in the post. We know who knows. And we were never able to discuss it. And it was a dirty secret for a long, long time. People didn't discuss it because they were afraid of being confronted in the streets. They didn't discuss it because they were afraid they might not get promotion in work, that clients might leave them, that their children might be targeted in school by others. And it's great that people can speak now. And I think certainly, and Graham alluded to earlier, society has moved on, absolutely, most definitely. And Colin mentioned the Red Sea poll earlier on this year, which showed only 7% of people have those extreme views. But even this morning, there was a tweet from a lawyer in London referring to his collective as baby killers.
Mm-hmm. I know the account to which you're referring.
I don't think it's a lawyer.
Most of us have moved on to a point where we can deal with that kind of vitriol, but we know that there are people who've gone through this week who are having trouble coming to terms with the guilt, with the being made to feel ashamed for the medical choices that they've made. And I think it's utterly reprehensible that politicians still hide behind the fact that they say this is not a doorstep issue. We do have an election coming up. We need to make it perfectly clear that this is an election issue, that we will not vote for anybody belonging to a party that won't address this issue.
Absolutely.
That's the only way to get politicians' attention.
You're so right. And if I could respond to that just very quickly, because I told my story publicly, it's heading for 6 weeks now, so I've had a lot of that vitriol you're talking about. But it's to the tune of about 5%. The rest has been recognition from other people's own stories. It really showed me how Ireland has already moved on, and that the politicians need to be aware of that. I don't know who they're having plans with, but they're going to need some new bodies, because the way people are talking and the response that myself and also Roisin Ingle from the Irish Times, who told her story recently, we've had overwhelming support. And you know, your stories are these are the emergencies. I cannot believe, like I said at the beginning, that these stories have not stung people into action. But if they haven't, then we'll just have to be so numerous, and we are. But the shame, I said something else at the March for Choice, that, you know, a secret left untold too long becomes a lie. We've all been colluding in a big, fat lie, and it's time to start telling the truth, and the politicians will have no choice but to catch up with us. So thank you for speaking. I'm so sorry to hear your own story, but thank you very much for sharing it with us. Maybe just one more question. So please say yes.
It's not really a question. I'm Emma from Alliance for Choice, and me and my colleagues do a lot of kind of on the ground activism. And you know, I don't believe that you need to have your own personal abortion story to talk about this. And I believe that you can talk to anybody about this. So I've had shot taxi drivers and people asking why I'm travelling to London today for a conference on abortion. Or the more you bring it up, the easier it is to bring up, and you'd be surprised at the response that you normally have, to be honest with you. Yeah. And the other point, which is kind of what Tara had already made, somebody had done a very clever word cloud of what the anti-choicers say to people on Twitter. And the biggest, largest, most numerous word was whore.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That just gives you a glimpse into really why they're against this. It's quite control of women's sexual behaviour.
Yeah, I've had a fair bit of a, why didn't you use contraception, you slut? And I went, wow, why didn't I think of that? God, thanks, man, for telling me. Thanks for explaining.
Our answer would be because we wanted a baby.
Pardon?
Our answer in TFMR would be
yes, absolutely. You wanted a baby, exactly. You had a wish for a pregnancy.
There shouldn't have to be a defence.
Absolutely.
There should never have to be a defence, and we should stop being defensive about it.
Well, thank you for that contribution. I would like to thank everyone who's spoken today. I would especially like to thank Graham and Helen for travelling from London and for adding the film to the discussion. Colm, I'm going to thank everybody because I don't forget anybody. I'm like, I won't have a whole list. But before we even get there, he's way jumping
never
the gun.
Never melt anything as a comedian.
Before we even get there, though, I'd like to invite anyone who has anything else to say before we wrap up. So just in case anyone would like to add anything at the end.
Well, I think Helen and I would definitely like to say, you know, we're just tourists on this issue. And thank you to all the people who are living here. And fighting for it, you know, we go back to our normal lives tomorrow, but it's people like you, it's people like you who, you know, who are really fighting it. So thank
we've
you.
Had just amazing support already on Twitter, I think it's amazing.
Guys, you'll never just be tourists. So, and I mean, also just to say it, I'm not blown smoke.
You like Father Ted?
The one. I'm a bit partial. I've shocked to many people that I'm a bit of a fan of Father Ted for lots of reasons. You know, the one thing that we know, and the one thing that Amnesty has known for more than 50 years, it's when we tell human stories, when we talked about our experiences, when we humanise the challenges and the issues and the kinds of human rights violations that people experience, when we move them from being abstract, hidden, secretive, cloaked issues, when we shine a light on the space where people are suffering in silence, and when we break through all of the violent, vitriolic demands, and that's what we're talking about in this context, that require that demand that we be silent, because it's our voices that those who oppose us most fear, because there is an integrity to what we say, because it's grounded in truth, and it's not, it's nuanced, you know, it's not hateful or vitriolic or one-sided or ill-considered. The things that we have to say on these issues are nuanced, because our lives are complex, our lives are nuanced, our experiences are nuanced. I know this on every level, both personally and professionally. It's when we as individual, ordinary human beings stand up, deny and defy those who require us to be silenced and speak from a place of truth, mm-hmm. that we start to change the world. And I'm not trying to grandstand here, but these are the conversations that change the world. And these are the conversations that, for me, make me absolutely convinced that within the next number of years, in the Republic, we repeal the Eighth Amendment, and in Northern Ireland, I really hope that we have safe and legal access to abortion, mm-hmm. as a human right and as it should be. And on those, for instance, you know, on those 7% or those tiny number of people who are going to rant and rave and scream and shout on social media over the next 24 hours or beyond, it is precisely because they are terrified of the power and strength and dignity of the truth that's being told here today that they will scream loudly. And what we have to do is allow them to and ignore them. Because it's the 81% of the population who believe in what we're saying that we need to speak to. That's the conversation that needs to happen. Those are the voices that need to be empowered. And those are the voices that need to challenge our political leaders to do their damn jobs and to show some leadership and show finally respect for women's human rights on both parts of this island.
And just finally, just to add, and again, it's just another shameless plug, we really do need the excellent film that Graham has produced to reach as wide an audience as possible. And we're all here today because we care about this issue and we're committed to change. So don't leave also without signing the petition just via the laptop. It's just a simple, straightforward case of typing in your name and adding your voice. And really, as Colin was rightly said, this is about bringing women's voices in particular to the fore. So for too long there's been the silence and stigma around it. It's time to break down those barriers and say no more. Abortion is an everyday healthcare issue in the way that other medical procedures are. Let's move on.
Thank you, Colin. Just before we wrap up, I want to reiterate what I said at the beginning, where I wish I had spoken out sooner, because if stories like Jennifer's don't move people in the door down in Dublin, then we really do need to band together and keep this conversation going. And so I appreciate what you said. You don't have to have lived experience to start challenging people's perceptions or reiterating that it is a common procedure and we need access to it here. So I would like to thank everyone who has spoken today. I'd like to thank Colm O'Gorman, and thank you to Annie for organising this event. Thank you all for coming.